On episode 262 of the Tennis Files podcast, you'll learn the 15 lessons from poker that apply to your tennis game.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey there, and welcome to this episode of the Tennis Files Podcast. Really appreciate you tuning in. And today I have a little bit of a different episode that I hope you find fun. And this one is comparing two different sports or games, depending on, you know, how you view the game of poker. And I'm sure that a lot of you have probably played cards in your life, and most of you, the vast majority, probably don't know that I've been playing poker for a very long time, whether it was online way back in the day or live at casino poker rooms. But I actually did something that was really fun and went to the World Series of Poker for the very first time last month, I believe, at the time of this recording. And it was really a blast. I played a couple WSOP events and a WPT event as well. So the World Series of Poker is basically a festival of poker tournaments that happens once per year in Las Vegas. And I did really well. I played one tournament that was $777 buy-in, and I ended up getting, I think, 770th place, funny enough, out of 8,000 players, which paid out about $1,400. And then I played an $800 tournament, again, World Series of Poker tournament. That one I got 900th out of, I think, 3,000 players or so. And I did not cash, because usually they pay out the top 15% or so. And then I played what's called a satellite tournament that was $600. And the prize for that was that the top 19 people out of, I guess, 184 that registered would get a ticket to a $5,000 event. So normally you'd have to buy in for $5,000, but I was able to actually get a ticket through playing that $600 tournament. And then I ended up playing the $5,000 tournament, and that was really tough. I would say that was like, you know, if you're a 4-5 and you're playing against like 6-0s, something like that. So it was a really great experience, but I did get knocked out of that one on the first day. Did not cash that. And then I played a $1,500 tournament, the last tournament for me of the WSOP. And that one was really, really fun. So in that one, I believe there were, now I'm forgetting how many players, there were at least 3,000 players in this one. And I ended up running really deep, which is getting really far, and cashing in 92nd place. So it was really thrilling to, you know, almost make the final table, which is the final 9 players in most cases. And I cashed in that one for about $5,000. So, you know, I have been playing a lot of poker throughout my life, sporadically, obviously a lot more tennis than poker, but I think poker is my first love. But my second love is what I mean. Tennis is my first love. But it was a great experience, and I actually wore my US Open hat like every day that I played the tournament, except like one day. And I got a lot of people who were asking me about tennis, and some of the professional poker players who I played against, they actually played tennis. One guy named Shane Schlager, who was a 3-5, and we were trying to hit there, but it just didn't happen because we were both so focused on playing the poker tournaments. And I met some cool pickleballers as well. I know it's, you know, controversial. Some people, obviously, you know, and with some reason, I guess, you know, because pickleball is exploding, obviously, and taking tennis courts, which I don't personally enjoy at all. But, you know, they were also chatting with me, and shout out to Hutch, who's a super nice guy. He actually tried to bluff me in a pot, and I was able to make a big call, but no, he's a great player. And I thought that with all this, you know, with all my experience playing poker, I thought I would just try to compare it with tennis And so I have 15 lessons for you that I hope you find to be really interesting. And I hope that you get to play poker sometimes. Obviously, not investing your life savings, but, you know, just playing at a normal, proper level for you in terms of money investment. And, you know, I used to play just like the lowest stakes games, like, you know, put in like $2 and things like that, and just worked my way up. I don't want to get into too much of the details and all that, but yeah, it's been definitely a fun journey in poker and tennis. So the first lesson that I found from poker that applies to your tennis game, and in this case, I'm talking about tournament poker. It's a pretty obvious one. We'll start with the obvious. You know, tournament poker is just like a tennis tournament. Your main goal is to survive both in tournament poker and a tennis tournament. If you lose all your chips or if you lose your match, then you're going to be out. So that's why I really like poker tournaments, because they're just like tennis tournaments in that aspect. And the second lesson is that you have to really understand your opponents, which is perhaps one of the most important lessons. Like in tennis, it's obvious, you know, you got to understand the player. Are they, you know, for instance, a baseliner? Are they what you call a pusher? Are they serving volleyer? What are their shot patterns? You know, where do they like to go? On the short ball, is it always going to be to your backhand? Is it going to be down the line all the time? What are their favorite and weaker shots? But a lot of people don't realize that poker is also a game of knowing your opponent. And some think it's just all luck and, you know, going all in, you know, all these things. But you have to know your opponents. Are they a very conservative or tight player? Are they passive? So like you're driving the action, you're betting, and they're just reacting to you. Are they really loose, where they're, you know, betting a lot and calling a lot? Are they really aggressive? And then based on what they do and also their betting patterns, maybe you can pick up that when they bet small, they have a weak hand, and when they bet big, they have a strong hand. Then you can play accordingly and adjust your own game style. So you have to do that in tennis and in poker, which makes poker really fun. Lesson number three, and I have a lot of lessons, so I don't want to belabor the points, but number three is that, kind of similar building off number two, is you have to adjust your game to your opponent. So more concrete examples: in tennis, when you play somebody, let's say, who you know is not that consistent, but they go for really big shots, and you know that if you're simply more consistent than them, provided you keep the ball past the service line, let's say, then you just want to be more consistent, because you know that game style, which hopefully you're capable of pulling off, will win you the matches. Conversely, when you play somebody who is super consistent and, you know, just gets the ball back all the time and doesn't really do any damage to you, you want to take control and be more aggressive and not play against their own game style, because then they're going to beat you because they're better at that. Conversely, if that's the right word, in poker, let's say you're playing a loose, aggressive player who likes to just raise a lot and bet a lot. You should tighten up so that you play more premium hands, which, you know, a lot of you have heard of, like pocket aces and things like that, pocket kings, pocket queens. You don't want to play very wide selection of hands, because it's going to be very difficult, especially if you're out of position, which means that basically, like, you're not the last person to be able to bet. That's going to be a tough situation for you. So in that aspect, it's very, very interesting and fun to be able to have to adjust your game according to how your opponents play in poker and tennis. Number four, patience is definitely key in both tennis and poker. And I will call poker a sport, because I was playing poker basically like, oh gosh, maybe like 12 hours a day. You know, these poker tournaments, they're long, long grinds basically. But patience is so key, because just like in tennis and poker, you can't win a tournament, you know, in a few hands or in a few points, right? You have to just go approach it point by point or hand by hand, build up your chip stack, or try not to lose chips when you're playing a poker tournament. And in tennis, you just, every single point, you have to figure out, what is my game plan here? What types of, you know, shot patterns do I need to execute to be able to win this point? And then when you do that enough times, then you'll win the game and you'll win the set and then the match. So you do have to be very patient. I know some very intelligent friends of mine who they simply just cannot play poker because they just want to play every hand and just bet a bunch of chips, and it doesn't work out when you're impatient. So that's another reason why it can really benefit you to play poker again at a reasonable amount, for your bankroll, as they say. Then you can transfer that skill over to tennis. I think that's why I'm pretty good. I'm not going to say I'm amazing at poker, but that's why I feel like I'm pretty good at poker. Because, you know, I've had to be patient in tennis and crossovers there with that card game there. And number five is there's no shot clock, which is something that's, you know, fairly unique to tennis. I know there's other sports with no shot clock, but basketball comes to mind, soccer or football for you Euros over here, over there across the pond. They have shot clocks. So you go up, 6-0, you go up 80 to 45 or something like that. You can kind of like coast and waste time. In tennis and poker, you have to, or at least the tournaments, you have to close it out. You have to either win all the chips or win the required number of points, games, sets to win the match or the tournament. Very similar there. Number six, a lot of emotional ups and downs. It was kind of funny. My opponents at the poker tournaments did get mad at me for winning certain pots. You know, some pretty standard spots where somebody had pocket kings and they went all in, and I had ace queen, and it wasn't that much of my stack, let's say. You know, I had, just to give you some further details, I think I had something like 300,000 chips, and then my opponent went all in for like maybe like 80 or 90,000. And basically, you, when somebody goes all in like that, you kind of try to put them through a range of hands. Like, what hands can this person have? You know, maybe they're pretty aggressive, so maybe they're going all in with like pocket sevens plus, you know, plus means just like pocket sevens, eights, nines, tens, jacks, queens, kings, aces. And then they could also have ace 10, ace jack, ace queen, ace king, probably not ace queen because I have that. So you run through that, and I ended up calling. And then I was very fortunate, obviously, because pocket kings were ahead, but I hit an ace on the flop, which is the first three cards in no limit hold'em. And then my opponent got mad. I actually, I said sorry and was legitimately sorry, felt bad. I mean, obviously I was happy to win the hand, but I said sorry. And then the person said, no, you're not sorry, and just like stormed off. And well, he did say that he was having a tough summer in his rant. So there you go. And then another opponent got mad at me because he went all in with ace nine. And this was very deep in that other tournament, the one where I got 92nd place. And I had, I think at the time I had like 1.6 million chips, which was super cool to be able to verbalize, I raise 1 million or whatever. But I took a little bit of time. He had ace nine, went all in, and I called with ace jack. And then he was really pissed off. I don't know why. I think he thought that I took too much time. But long story short, people get mad, for getting unlucky in poker, or if they think that you didn't play well, which caused them to lose, which is really stupid because you want somebody to play not optimally so that you can benefit long term from it. So, but sometimes in the short term, you may get unlucky. Hopefully that makes sense to some people here. But obviously in tennis, it's very emotional too. It can be the weather or the crowd or your opponent that is doing things that are maybe not ethical, but not against the rules, or maybe they're against the rules. Long bathroom breaks, things like that. So it's good training for both, the combination of the patience and then the emotional ups and downs. Also, if in poker, if you get unlucky, obviously, you have a great hand and somebody hits a card on the river or something like that. Like, if you can easily blow up and then just lose the rest of your chips very easily, going all in on very weak hands, stuff like that. But, the professionals and also the very good amateurs, they understand that these things happen. You still get unlucky with tennis. Your opponent will hit a let cord, and you just have to take a breath and then compose yourself in between points and the point, and just go again. And also in that last poker tournament, I was down to very few chips at one point, actually several points, and instead of giving up, you just have to maintain your composure and try to find the best spots to increase your chip stack. So very, very similar there. And then number seven is weaker players can beat stronger players on a good day. So I would say that definitely poker has more of this, where you can play against a world-class player who is much better than you, and then you can just spike a lucky card, or just you can get in a situation where you both have extremely good hands and there's no way that the top player can fold against you, and you just, that's how it goes. You know, like let's say you have aces and he has kings, and you both go all in. That's really hard to avoid. Although some of the best players can avoid that situation and fold kings. But also in tennis, you know, sometimes like you're a 4-5, you're playing a 5-0, or you're playing against a very good player and, you know, they're having an off day, and you can take advantage and you can still figure out maybe the one or two strategies that will give them a hard time. And so it's definitely possible, and it's inspirational too, you know, to play poker and then beat a professional in a hand or several hands, which I was able to do. And, you know, that can happen in tennis too. So it's not something where as soon as you play a better player, like, there's no way I can win this match. You know, you got to figure out the strategy. And that's the same too. Like, you know, with tennis and poker, like, again, you know, you're playing against a professional and you know their tendency is to be aggressive. So then maybe you tighten up and then you get maximum value and you play a stronger hand, weaker, something like that.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Number eight is it's very difficult to make a living playing tournaments for both poker and tennis. Very large fields of players in poker tournaments, especially like I mentioned, you know, one of them was like 8,000 players or 7,000 or 8,000, 3,000, all these crazy numbers. And so, you know, I have to admit, of course, I did get lucky in several hands as well, to be able to run deep. And I was really pleased with, you know, my performances, essentially cashing in, I think, 3 out of the 5 tournaments, basically, which was a really good result. Very pleased about that. I also played cash games and won some money there, which was great. But, you know, same thing. You know, basically, tennis tournaments, it's so difficult. I mean, and here we're talking about pros pretty much, but like they're playing and traveling around the globe and you have expenses for flight and food and lodgings, and a lot of lower level tournaments really don't pay anything. They barely cover. I think I've seen many times, you know, these players have held up their checks for making the semis and it's like €100 or, you know, something ridiculous where it's like you're losing money like that. So it's tough. And then with poker, you know, you can play your best possible game and get unlucky and not cash for, you know, 10, 12 tournaments in a row. Actually, the individual who won the World Series of Poker main event this year, which is a $10,000 buy-in, I did not play that, and he won $8 million. He actually posted his results for the entire World Series of Poker this year, and he went 10 straight tournaments making $0. So it can be very tough from that aspect for sure. So it's tough to make a living, but if you're really good, then eventually the results will show for both sports. Number nine, are losing streaks are very common where you don't make any money or lose money. So yeah, that's pretty much what I just mentioned here. Some of these points build off of the other ones. So again, bad streak or get unlucky in both sports, and there's no way you're... staying above profitability. So I won't belabor that point. Number 10, you could tell I have these written down, obviously. Number 10, every single decision is extremely important. You have to keep your focus. This is perhaps arguably even more important in poker. One wrong move and you can lose a lot or all of your chips and get knocked out of the tournament. You know, there was one hand where, I think I played it very well. You know, I think nobody would argue with what I did, but essentially I had a hand with two players left, like pre-flop. I don't know how many of you understand this, but essentially I went all in and somebody had, I had ace eight and somebody had queens. So they called me and I was knocked out in 92nd place. But I thought about the hand a lot more later. And basically the person who had the queens and the other person next after him were playing very tight. And I felt like if I had just raised small instead of gone all in for all my chips, and then the other player would have re-raised me, then I could have folded. So basically what I'm trying to say is that, you know, one wrong move and you can lose. And that's what makes, you know, poker and tennis really exciting too, because you have to have your full focus and concentration. Same thing with tennis. I was watching my friend Sophie Chang, shout out to her. She played so well at City Open. We're right in the thick of it as I record this, but she played with her partner and they were up in the tie break and, you know, they were up like 7-4 and like, you know, it got to like eight all. And, you know, it's just her partner just got kind of tight with the backhand return. And you know, we all do that, right? But, and then she, missed the return. And that was, I think, twice at 7-4 and 8-all or something like that. And basically what I'm trying to say is like when you get into these tight situations, like if you lose one point, then you can lose the match. And that's the same thing that makes it exciting and things that you have to work on. And that's the beauty too. It's like when you get into a tight situation and you falter, then you can concentrate on that. And you can say, you know what, like now I'm going to practice like, you know, hundreds of backhand returns like in the next few weeks and make it so that I can do it in my sleep. And I'm going to work on my mental game and things like that so that I will make that next time. And that's what you can do in both poker and tennis. But it requires so much concentration. And imagine, you know, that's why I call it a sport. Imagine, you know, needing this type of concentration for 12 hours a day for multiple days. That's what that is required for poker. And then tennis, obviously, for, you know, 2-3 hours, maybe even more. So that's that. And number 11 is, it's usually best to stick to your game and play to your strengths. So of course, in tennis, you know, you want to use your strengths and apply them to your opponent's weaknesses as much as possible. You know, just simple example, I have a big forehand, I have a good kick serve. I try to apply those to my opponent's backhand, which, you know, one-handed backhand, let's say, which is weaker and yields more short balls and errors. That's what I do best. Let me do that. Hit more forehands, basically. Similarly, in poker, you know, if you're normally a tight, aggressive player, let's say, like you pick good hands and play them strongly, you don't want to all of a sudden try to play really loose and aggressive and play like tons of hands if that's not in your toolkit, because then you're probably not going to do well in that regard using that style, and then you're going to lose. So there's number 11. Number 12 is you meet a lot of really cool people. So as I mentioned partially, so I met several poker players. I also met Phil Hellmuth, who has the most WSOP bracelets, 16 of them, which is a record. So he's won 16 of those World Series of Poker tournaments. Also, yeah, the tennis and pickleball players, other nice people, movie producer, etc. at these tournaments simply by wearing a tennis hat. Well, I mean, not just that. I met the, you know, non-tennis people, but also tennis and pickleball people thanks to the hat. And then tennis, obviously, I met so many cool people like yourselves listening. Just really love connecting with you all. Email me anytime and I'll try to respond, or, you know, message me on Instagram or Twitter, Facebook. And yeah, you know, my friends have afforded me from tennis have afforded me a great and fun life. And I've even gotten jobs thanks to people in tennis. So yeah, it's been great. So, and podcasts and summit interviews obviously met some amazing high performance people. So yeah, you can meet a lot of great people in poker and tennis. You know, don't just think about like the image of card rooms where people are just, you know, smoking crazy and they're all, you know, disgusting looking and things like that. You actually meet a lot of really well-off people. I met several attorneys as well. And then number 13 are aces are your friend. I love this one. I even wrote a smiley face on my list. So pocket aces are the best hand in hold'em, at least pre-flop. If you play the game, then you know there's things like sets and full houses and flushes and straights and all that stuff. But also, obviously, hitting aces is ideal in tennis. Just wanted to point that out. Number 14, you improve greatly by competing and playing tournaments against both weak and strong players. So in poker, you know, I made some mistakes and lost chips because of them. And I was able to talk with one of my poker tennis friends. Shout out to Sam. And, you know, especially because it was a high pressure situation line for the poker tournaments, I've learned from and look forward to correcting those mistakes next time. Similarly in tennis, you know, you play tough players who are better than you. They can highlight your weaknesses, which you can then work on for next time. And even, you know, playing weak players too in both sports. Maybe you make a mistake in poker and you didn't extract as much value as many chips as you could have. Or in tennis, you play a weak player and you win, but it's a close match and you should have dominated. You go back and figure out what went wrong with those respective tournaments there. And number 15 is you have to focus on making the best play for every single situation without fear of the results. So this is so important in poker. You know, you can't think of the money that's on the line when you're making a play. If you are, then you need to play lower stakes or undergo mental game training, because this will cause you to play scared and make suboptimal decisions. You know, for instance, if I am, you know, in a hand and I'm thinking, you know, somebody bets big and all of a sudden my first thought is, oh my gosh, like if I call here, then I may be knocked out and, you know, first place is $600,000 and I can't do this. Like, instead you have to think about, okay, what is this person likely to have? Like, what's their range of hands? And, you know, would they bet this much with this type of hand, et cetera? Same thing with tennis. I mean, you have to focus on executing, you know, the game plan. And you shouldn't be thinking about the results. Think about the process. As my coach, shout out Keith Purrier, would always tell me and the team at UMBC Tennis. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. Whenever I thought about the results, I would get tight and then I would lose. And just think about too, you know, if I'm talking about like poker and money here, the professionals, you know, they're in the quarters of Wimbledon and they're not thinking about how the next pay jump is like 300K or whatever if they win or lose the match, right? Otherwise, they'll play terribly. So you definitely have to focus on making the best play without fear of the results during every point. So that's it. That's my 15 lessons from poker that apply to your tennis game. And I hope you enjoyed it. You know, for those of you who don't play poker or this seems pretty foreign, I was going to say I apologize, but I mean, I don't want to say that. But I think it's just, it's a really cool game, poker. And again, you know, I have to give a disclaimer that, you know, play poker at your own risk. And I highly encourage you, you know, to, if you do try, if you haven't played before, obviously just play it, you know, for free. Don't invest money into it in the beginnings. Just learn it, you know, at first. And then when you do play, just play very small games, you know, maybe play a tournament with a buddy, you know, you each chip in like $5 just to put some seriousness into it and then analyze your play and then just build up from there. So that's one way to go about it. But I actually have a lot of friends who play poker. Johnny V, I'll call him. Sam, Paul H, you know who you are. You all play a lot. So I'd love to hear from you if you do play poker as well. But yeah, again, I hope this was a fun crossover episode. I know, you know, maybe some of you have seen poker in the title and you just probably click away or something like that. I don't know, but I really enjoy the game and I think there's so many life lessons you learn from it. I mean, again, my top ones are mental game and emotional ups and downs and Trying to play within your means as well, and analyzing opponents. And when you're competing, it's just so much fun to compete in a tournament where you're trying to be the last person standing, and then learning from mistakes. Like, all these things are really great. And I think just the more you do them in other aspects of your life, the better you'll carry them over to tennis as well, and vice versa. So, all right, I hope you enjoyed this one. Time for me to go to the City Open, which is my hometown tournament. One crazy story too, by the way, before I leave you, is there was actually a stampede while I was playing that last tournament on the first day. I made it to the second day at night. But the first day at night, there was a threat of an active shooter, which turned out thankfully to not be anything. It was a false alarm. But somebody in the room or security or something like mentioned that there's an active shooter like around the strip. And then all of a sudden, everybody, like probably, yeah, several thousands of people in the ballroom where we were playing the tournaments, they got up. And luckily, I was near the exit doors and I kind of got down. Thankfully, I do quite a bit of, staying low when I do my side shuffles. So that helped a lot. Like, I stayed low and just sprinted out of there. And it was a very harrowing experience, if that's the right word. Really scary. But thankfully, nothing happened. And we came back and, you know, continued upon our business. Well, actually, we ended for the night because it was like 10:30. So we ended at early and came back a bit earlier the next day. That's it. Another little story for you. But with that, if you enjoyed this episode, and I hope that at least a few of you did, I would really appreciate it if you would subscribe to the Tennis Files podcast. And you can do that in your favorite podcast app of choice or by going to tennisfiles.com/Apple Podcasts and leaving a rating subscribing, or you can leave a rating too. And also would love to leave you with a quote, as I often do at the end of the show. And this one is by Benjamin Franklin. And Benjamin said, "An investment in knowledge pays the best interest." Love that quote. I hope you all tune into the City Open this year as well. It's a really good tournament. Another last side note is I went to the Players' Party, its Taste of City event, with my dad and, as you probably know, Will Hamilton from Fuzzy Yellow Balls and some other friends. Shout out to John S. as well and Alex C. But we had a good time. Took pictures with Benoit Paire, Andre Rublev, Rohan Bopanna, Prakash Armitage, who's a big personality in Tennis Channel. I think Diana Yamstrinka was there as well. And Teresa, I'm sorry, I'm forgetting her last name, but she's a great player, top 40, and has really cool tattoos. that was super fun. So I know they have that in New York, and they're not paying me for this. It is actually quite expensive, but can be worth it for you tennis fanatics. So maybe check that out too. It's like Taste of City was this one, and I guess maybe New York or Taste of US Open a few days before the US Open. So there you go. Just want to let you know that it was really fun. And if you want to see the pictures from that event, you can go to my Instagram page. It's tennis.files, so tennis period and files, and you'll see me with Benoit and Andre, was very nice. They're both super nice, actually. And Rohan and Prakash, etc. And Will. So, and John as well. So, all right. Have a great one and wish you the best and keep improving your tennis game. Time for me to go to the City Open now. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.